you talking about, guys? I'm Sir Noble. What have you done to him, you maniac?
Satan is his father, not Guy.
No! It can't be! No!
If that doesn't send a chill up your spine, you are probably an invertebrate. This is Cameron Meyer, and that was, of course, Mia Farrow in the 1968 cinematic masterpiece Rosemary's Baby. I had the honor of speaking with Miss Farrow on the eve of her appearance at the 2025 Florida Film Festival, where she will be screening that aforementioned horror classic.
Hi, Miss Farrow. How are you?
You can call me Mia.
Mia, great to meet you over the phone.
Me too.
Yeah. Thank you so much for speaking with me today.
My pleasure.
You've obviously had a legendary career over the last 60 plus years on stage, in film, and on television.
I've been very, very lucky.
I read recently that you started in film at the age of two.
Well, I don't know if that's true, because I wouldn't have a memory of that. But definitely at 12,
yes.
I did. It was supposed to be a speaking part, but somebody else took my line. I was in one of my father's films when I was 12. And then I started working in earnest when I was 17.
Yes. So there's obviously so much we can talk about, but I would like to start with Rosemary's Baby, because of course that's the film that you're going to screen
at the event.
Yeah, you'll be screening that at the 2025 Florida Film Festival. If you don't mind, let's time travel together back to 1968. Okay. Going back 50 years now, what are the most vivid memories you have of making that movie?
Well, I was excited to get the part because there was a big bestseller book of Rosemary's Baby that the Ira Levin book had already come out and was extremely successful. So I was thrilled when I was offered the part. And I know that I was not by any means the first choice. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, I mean, if they had offered it to Jane Fonda, it would have been wonderful, and a bunch of other people. But fortunately for me, it was turned down by these, you know, extraordinary actors, actresses. I think Jane Fonda, looking back, she probably would have been better.
Oh.
In the book, she's from Omaha, and she's a farm girl, and she's 27. And I don't think when we started, if I had turned 21, but anyway, I was at most 21 while we were filming. And I was not an obvious childbearing stock farm girl, you know?
Yes.
Whereas Jane Fonda could pass for somebody from Omaha. I mean, she could do anything. She's so great. Anyway, it fell to me. So I got the part and I was thrilled. And luckily I had that book. So though we didn't shoot it in sequence, I was able to always know where I was. Now, back at the time, our director, Roman Polanski, a superb director, spoke very little English and gave very little direction, except for the physical part, like your mood. His camera work, if you've seen the film, is what's extraordinary about this film.
Yes.
He also wrote the script, but as I said, he barely spoke English at the time, so it was directly taken from the book. So, you know, it was helping. Obviously, it was very complex. I'm in every scene. And it's a complex part because it takes me from a happy young wife all the way to something different. But that's what an actor
Yes, that was your first that was your first leading role in a Hollywood film, wasn't it?
It was, but also I have to say I don't think I've been offered a part that substantial since. We all as actors hope for a part that asks a great deal of us.
Yes,
and that part certainly asked a great deal of me as an actor, and we live for that, you know, actors. So. You know, most other films that I've done haven't asked that much. You know, you come in and you do a certain role, and that's a certain thing. But this brought me through all kinds of emotional hoops. I just did a play that did ask that much of me, and I was on Broadway, and I of course I felt the shame about that play, like gratitude to be asked much of.
Yes.
You know, every actor hopes for that, and I got that a few times in my career.
Well, it was apparently quite a harrowing shoot in some ways. For instance, you were tasked with walking into real traffic in New York City while yeah. Roman Polanski followed you with a handheld camera because none of his crew wanted to do that.
So they were way too rational. Their family cared about their lives. And, you know, it was not a very safe thing to be doing. And Roman told me, oh, don't worry, nobody will hit a pregnant woman. That had a fake.
Well, I'm glad he was right.
And I'm like, oh, okay. I mean, I knew it was risky. And I also knew that I would be the one hit before Roman because he was on the other side of me. But, you know, I don't know if I do it now. I don't know if I do it after I had children and things like that. But, I did it then, that's for sure.
Yes. Speaking of Roman Polanski, you had the unique chance on Rosemary's Baby to be on a set with two great directors, because, of course, John yes. Cassavetes at the time was a more established director.
Yes.
What was that like? I've read that there was a little bit of creative tension there, because, of course, Cassavetes was a rather different director in style than Polanski. Did you feel any of that creative tension, which obviously led to a wonderful film? Did you feel any of that tension on set?
The two men were very friendly, and they were both, especially Roman, was more comfortable talking to men. He was very shy, anyway, with me, that John was there, and they were both given a Yamaha motorcycle or motorbike, whatever they were, and they would ride around in around the Paramount lot on their Yamaha, because I think there's a Yamaha commercial in the film.
Hmm.
So they got their motorbikes. I don't know if they were given them to keep or just lent them. I just don't know. But I was not in their circle of little their man thing, you know. I was easily ignored. And, you know, John was what seemed to me a lot older at the time, and I was also worshipful of his wife, and I loved his films. So they started off on a great foot, the two men.
Yes.
And then as the shooting went on, John's style of acting and directing was so organic to John, he wanted certain moves, it felt comfortable to him. He wanted to be able to have a little more latitude with the dialogue, for example. You know, put in his ums and ers and improvise a little bit. As you know, his films are so, at least, you know, ostensibly improvisational.
Yes, yes.
In texture. And Roman was every and but an er had to be written with what was in the book and what was in the script. And so there was no making up of words, and there was no, if you've seen the film, it's meticulously shot, very long sequences for those days, especially. And also, you know, for example, if I was holding up a glass, and it was half an inch to the right, half an inch to the left, half an inch up or down, it could have messed up the camera shot. Because everything was connected.
Mm-hmm.
And John had, you know, he disagreed with Roman about some of the blocking, let's put it that way, where you stand. He didn't like that he couldn't improvise, and he didn't like, oftentimes he said, I don't think I would
Yes.
A baby in a cradle, that kind of thing. And Roman had set up each person where he wanted them, and John had a different idea of where he should be, knowing his character, as he did, and he was such a great director and actor. But Roman was very abrupt, just said, you sit where I told you to. And John disagreed, and it came to a point where they were heading toward each other in a not very nice way. It felt like the next thing in my childhood, if anybody was fighting or there was any kind of something unpleasant going on, I felt like I was watching TV and I couldn't change the channel. And that's what that moment felt like. And fortunately, Ruth Gordon, who was also part of the team, walked in and she said in that voice that could crack glass, now, let's all get back to work. Broke the bad bell that was going on. But, they disagreed. The style acting, I mean, John was doing it to finance his films, you know, and that's the only reason he was doing Rosemary's Baby, which at the time was... Nobody had heard of Roman Polanski at the time. And William Castle was the producer. Now,
yes.
He made a lot of horror films. They were kind of what they call B movies. And it was supposed to be just a cheesy little horror movie. So but that's the way people thought of it and talked about it at the time.
Yes.
Just a little horror movie. But of course, oddly, fabulously, it became much more. And I know that I'm told it's taught in film school for the shots.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
An amazing actor. I mean, amazing director. I don't know about his acting, but you know, if he wanted to convey something to me because he didn't have the linguistic skills, he would try to act it out for me, which of course,
Mia, let me go back to something that you said about John Cassavetes. You said there was some disagreement over the blocking in that classic final scene. I love that scene, and I love how John is so scared in that scene. He's so embarrassed. And first, he's right in the center of the group, but then he retreats to a back room, and there's that great shot of him sort of cowering almost down a hallway. I was curious, do you remember how John wanted to block it?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't even know if I knew at the time. I just, because I was not exactly part of, I come in on the scene.
Yes.
So, I just was in another part, it was a large room, and I was in another part of the room, and I don't honestly remember where, but it has to do with where he was told to be.
I see.
Positioned. And he disagreed that his character would not be there.
Yeah.
That's the part I remember.
Going to Ruth Gordon, you mentioned Ruth Gordon. She, of course, won an Oscar for supporting. Amazing. How did you develop the great chemistry that you had with Ruth Gordon? Did that just come naturally?
I knew Ruth because I was friends with Natalie Wood. And Natalie had worked with Ruth. And when Ruth and Garth Lucanin came to Beverly Hills to visit, we Natalie and I, gave her a welcome party at the Beverly Hills Hotel. And then Ruth and I and Garson became friends. So right after Rosemary's Baby, they took me to Martha's Vineyard.
Oh.
Because things had fallen apart in my personal life, and they were wonderful friends. And ultimately, I got a house on the vineyard and was going to live there, except it didn't turn out to be very practical for a working actor. But, it's a heavenly spot. So, it was easy. Ruth was so smart and so much fun. And Garson, as you know, wrote Born Yesterday, among other things, and you know the two of them wrote most
Following Rosemary's Baby, you did some other psychological horror, such as Secret Ceremony, See No Evil, The Haunting of Julia.
Secret Ceremony was, of course, I would do that, because it was Joseph Losey, it was Elizabeth Taylor, it was Robert Mitchum, it was a very interesting script. I don't think it was hugely commercially successful, but who knew that? You never know when you make a movie, and it's really not about that. It was about the director. So I was thrilled to be doing that.
Were you worried that you were going to get typecast? Yeah, yes.
Actually, the other two, it was because I was married to somebody who didn't want me to leave the country to do a movie ever again. You know, it was back in the day when some men of a certain age and beyond thought that women should be home all the time.
Yes.
In the kitchen, perhaps. Yes. If not in the kitchen, certainly by the hearth. And I tried to do that. I did a lot of theater. I joined the Royal Shakespeare Company, which I joined. They invited me, and I did 3-4 plays with them, and I did a couple of movies just to make a little money, frankly. Those movies that you mentioned were not gratifying at all, so I really, basically, I never saw them. And
you never saw them?
I don't think anybody else did, either, you know?
Well, I've seen them, but you've still never seen them to this day?
No, to this day, I've never seen them. I've seen the one with Elizabeth, I've seen that one, but I didn't see the other two.
One thing I love about Rosemary's Baby is the music, specifically the creepy...
Oh, yeah.
The creepy...
You know, that's Christoph Komeda.
Yes, the creepy lullaby. I didn't want to bring up what some people have called the Rosemary's Baby curse, because I don't really believe in that, but it's astonishing the chain of really strange events that surrounded it. Speaking of Komeda's music, you sang the lullaby. Did they ask you to, or did that happen organically, or how did you end up singing that?
Well, I was already shooting Secret Ceremony when they were
Another thing that has always fascinated me about the film is the fact that Robert Redford almost got the John Cassavetes part. I think
it would have been great.
Do you think how would that have?
If he had done that with Jane Fonda, it would have been very obvious.
No, well, but with you, if he had done it with you, if you and he had done it, how do you think that would have changed the film?
I don't know because he's a very different actor.
Yes.
I believe he was asked. That's what I was told. And I believe he did turn it down.
Yes.
And it would have been different. And I think that, you know, this... What bothered me at the time was that John seemed old. Not that he wasn't old, but he was older than a young actor. He seemed old for the part, you know?
Yes.
But it didn't bother me. I just thought, gee, you know? But he gave that role a kind of New York actor feeling.
He did.
Bob Redford had the West Coast gorgeousness.
Yeah, yes.
So it would have been different, and maybe it wouldn't have been as good. You know, John gave it a strength
And you, of course, ended up working with Robert Redford just about 6 years later in The Great Gatsby, which it's almost an impossible story to film. It's the favorite book of so many people.
It's a slim volume, if you recall.
Yes.
And the writing is so exquisite. It's in the writing.
Yes.
It's in the passages. And even though they put as much of those as possible into the narration, I don't know if there can be a successful version of it because of the brilliance of that dazzling little book, you know.
Yes.
I don't know. And one could. I thought about it since. I forget. I was having a conversation with somebody, which caused me to think of it. But I kind of think Bob Redford. When we went to, we were in Newport to film before we began the rest of it back at Pinewood Studios. And in Newport, the Jackie Kennedy's family was there, all of Occam's people were there. And Bob was so comfortable and right among them, you know, that I sometimes thought, and I love Bob Redford, by the way, we became friends, and I absolutely loved working with him, and I love him as a human. But looking strictly at the book and at Bob, I wonder what it would have been like if somebody like Bruce Dern or Jack and The Shining. Oh my God!
Jack Nicholson. Nicholson.
Jack Nicholson. Somebody who's a little scary to that five people, because in the book people were uncomfortable with him, and yet because of his money they were drawn to him like moths to flame. Mm-hmm. But there was something about him that was uncomfortable making. Bob himself doesn't have that. But, you know, he's somebody that everybody would want to be hanging out with, including all those society people, and I saw that firsthand.
Now, your role, Daisy, is almost an impossible role to play. It's the sort of unobtainable woman. You bring a real ethereal quality to that role. I was wondering how you prepared for that.
Well, I was very disappointed. When we got to Newport, somebody had... I had done the screen test. They had given me a wig because I had very short hair. I got the part for whatever reason. But when we got there, somebody had ordered that the wig be dyed and set. And... I know it seems a small thing, but I thought Daisy should have curls that bobbed when she ran along, you know?
Yes.
Walked along. And it was so set, so sprayed, so dyed, so right out of the beauty parlor, that it undermined what I was trying to convey in every scene. And I know I shouldn't harp on it and so forth, but it just did. It was the wrong... wig. And then we were in Newport and we had to shoot in
Yes.
And so if you're about to see the greatest movie since Gone with the Wind, with the way David Merrick was selling it.
Yes.
And of course, it wasn't anything like Gone with the Wind. You know, it was a beautiful, delicate little movie, and it should have been promoted in that way.
That's how I see the book, too, frankly. I see it as, of course, it's a big party and it's the jazz age, but as it, at its core, it's a very touching, tragic little story.
Yeah.
Mia, I know that we have limited time, but I want to jump forward in time from The Great Gatsby just briefly to 1983, to one of my favorite films, one of the greatest comedies of all time, Zelig. I think it's quite profound. I think it's sort of a commentary on identity and self-worth. You're wonderful in it. Any thoughts on your role or on that film some 40 years later?
Oh, gosh, I can barely remember. I guess I saw it back then. I stopped seeing it after Broadway Danny Rose. Is that like, I don't really remember it that well. I mean, it was fun to do. I did say, and it does seem that the word jelly has gone into the vernacular, which is interesting in itself.
Well, your role is appreciated. I will say that. I think
a
lot of people adore that film and adore your work in that film. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Right after that, we did two films that Woody and I referred to as the Year of the Roses. It was Broadway Danny Rose and
Purple Rose of Cairo.
And we shot them simultaneously. And I don't know if you saw either one of them.
Of course.
But what was interesting to me, among many interesting things, was where we would go if I was dressed like in the costume. I dyed my hair brown, and you know, I play a very mousy girl in the 30s who loves going to the movies as a respite from a bad marriage and loneliness and so forth. That was Purple Rose of Cairo, and the wonderful Jack Daniels, Jeff Daniels was in it.
Yes.
And then we, at the same time, it's Broadway Danny Rose, and I took as my model who I wanted her to look like, Mrs. Rayo of Rayo's Restaurant. And it was a very different figure from, it was fake boobs, fake hips, and I got an accent, which I hope is accurate. And where I went and the way I was treated when I was in either one of those costumes was just separate from movies, very, very different. If I was dressed in a sort of trashy looking way, we could say, with the big boobs and the high hair and makeup and the whole thing, and the high heels and the clothes were purple, I got treated a certain way by men and by women who didn't know me. And if I was the mousy girl from Purple Rose of Cairo, I people treated me much more respectfully.
Oh.
And that's really interesting. If you happen to have a certain body type, you're not, as a woman, I don't know if that's true today, but I suspect it might be, that men feel enabled in some ways to behave differently than they would if you're a mousy little, I was in Purple Rose of Cairo, which is very dramatically revealing to me.
That's an interesting sociological experiment.
Yeah. It's got nothing to do with the film. Yeah.
So one final question for you. I would be remiss if I didn't mention your charity and your humanity. Oh, do we have a visitor?
Might be my dog sees something. It's probably a bear or a deer outside.
Who is this? Who is this we're listening to, Mia?
It's taking my dog. I'm trying to get her to come here.
Okay. Wait. What's the dog's name?
My dog is Peggy.
Peggy. Okay. So I would be remiss if I didn't mention your charity and your humanitarian work. Almost, more than almost any other movie star, you are known for your humanitarian work, specifically your work with children and UNICEF. What was happening?
Thank you. That's been very meaningful to me, by the way. We go this way at once, and I wanted to find a way to give. utmost. It's never going to be enough.
Yes.
So we do what we can as humans, right, for each other.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your work. Thank you. Thank you so much for your films. And thank you so much for speaking with me today.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Take care. And I look
Take care.
I look forward to seeing you at the festival.
Oh, I'll see you there then.
Yes.
Wonderful.